Welcome to the Father's Day. I am Destiny Peterson. Don't forget to hit the like button and the notification bell. I am about to have a conversation with a young man that I have wanted to speak to for a long time. He's interviewed me several times, but I have wanted to interview him. I have with me Stefan Molyneux. He is the founder and host of Free Domain, the largest and most popular philosophy show in the world. And I really appreciate you coming on today. Thank you for that.
My pleasure.
First, I want to know, are you a Christian or atheist?
I am an atheist, but it's funny, you know, I was anti-Christian for a long time, and then I realized, of course, I was simply attacking the foundations of my own history, and I was also attacking the foundations that kept a lot of my most treasured cultural institutions up.
Yeah.
It's sort of like you live in this big Roman building with all these columns, and you can't get out of that building because there's no escaping the history of Christianity that we have in the West, or I have personally, having been raised a Christian. So I'm taking this big philosophical sledgehammer to the base of these columns, knocking it down, thinking it's going to do something other than bring the roof down on my own head. So I've certainly been revising my estimate and appreciation of and positive relationship with Christianity very much over the last probably 4 to 5 years, if that makes sense.
Amazing. So at one point you were a Christian, you were raised Christian, and at that time, did you believe in God? Did you believe there was a God at that time?
Well, it's funny, you know, Jesse, to be frank, I think I had a stronger relationship to the devil than I did to God. And what I mean by that is not that I was doing anything weird with pentagrams. What I mean is that I was more concerned or fearful of the devil's power in the world than I was bathed in the light of God's grace in the world. Yeah. And I think that fear of the predator rather than the love of the shepherd, the fear of the wolf rather than the love of the shepherd, is one of the things that kind of made Christianity, as it stood for me in my mind, unsustainable, because when I grew up, I really felt, and I think I was, kind of surrounded by devilish human beings, by human beings who were
yes.
predatory, who had weird sexual habits, who were irresponsible, who were violent, who were greedy, the sort of marionettes of lust in the flesh. And I really recall, it's one of the things that drove me into philosophy, is in these beautiful abstractions, I could escape this hellscape of dysfunctional people around me when I was growing up. And I really felt like, you know, the fallen state, you know, the name of your show.
Yes.
I really, really felt that the devil ruled and the best escape was in philosophy. But in philosophy, of course, I found some arguments against religion that I think, to sort of break it down to its essence, I think I was more driven to escape the devils than I was to escape Christianity, if that makes sense.
Yes. So growing up, you were raised a Christian, but yet you could see that the world seemed to be evil. Evil was operating, if I'm understanding you correctly. What does it mean to you to be an atheist? When you say you're an atheist, I've asked other atheists what it meant to them. Does it mean you don't believe there is a God, or you just don't believe in a God?
So my position is called strong atheism, whereas in I positively affirm that there is no God. But that, to me, is one of the less important aspects of atheism. And I'm sorry to give you these big speeches, but given that I know I'm going to talk to you today and given our history of having conversations both in person and online,
yes.
I knew this was going to be an important part. To me, the big question for atheists is not whether there is a God or not, because being atheists, they believe either you can't prove it, which is more agnosticism, or that there isn't, which is atheism. The big question is, okay, let's say that you take God out of the equation. Okay, what do you do with the need for that extra O to go from God to good? Because atheists, by knocking down Christianity in particular, have created a void, a moral nihilism, a will to power. They have taken us from the human to the animal. And that's kind of what I felt I was surrounded by, these jackals, these hyenas, when yes. I was growing up. These manifestations of lust and manipulation. And so to me, the big danger and damage of atheism, which I will fully admit that when I was much younger, I contributed to, but I've tried to do penance by working on a secular system of ethics ever since is, okay, so let's say you don't believe in God. That's not the end of your intellectual journey. That's the beginning, and it's going to take you a long time to catch up to what Christians have. Because where does ethics, where does virtue, where do morals come from in Christianity? Well, they come from God's commandments. God is larger and deeper and more powerful than the universe, and morals are at the very center of that which exists. You take that out of our society, and what do you have? You have greed. You have lust. You have emptiness. You have manipulation. You have no fundamental requirement to respect persons, honesty, property, your culture, your history, your parents. And that has been a pretty chilling legacy, I think, that this amoral atheism has given us.
You are very interesting to me because you have the heart of a Christian. That's why I really wanted to understand this atheist thing and Christianity with you.
To put it more precisely, I can't find a rational proof of God, and since philosophy is about reason, that's the challenge, right?
And so when you are into philosophy, the ideas and understanding that you get, does it come from you?
So philosophy, you know, I hate to say my philosophy because that's like saying my science, you know, it's supposed to be something that is objective. So philosophy first starts with the study of the nature of reality. Like, what is reality? What is something that exists and something that doesn't exist?
Right.
Because if you don't have existence and non-existence, you can't say true or false. Like, if you don't know whether a tree really exists, you can't say that's a tree. So you have to start with what exists and what doesn't. And from there, you can get to what's true and what's false. And from there, which is the step I've been working on for so long, you can get to what's morally right and morally wrong. Now, because the study of reality relies on the evidence of the senses, you know, with your five senses, and it relies upon rational consistency, logical consistency, it has a problem when it comes to a deity, right? A God, because God does not impress himself on our senses. We can't converse with him in the way that you and I are conversing. We can't, you know, touch him. We can't call him. We can't measure him. We can't detect his presence in any way. And so philosophically speaking, that's the same as non-existence. And so that is the challenge that rational philosophy has with God, if that makes sense.
I see, yes. Is it possible there could be two realities, one real and one fake? Do you believe that's possible? And not seeing the real world, I believe that we have there are two realities. The real reality is within us, which come from God to the outside. And the fake reality is that they come from outside to within. The world is an illusion. Is that possible that the world, the trees, everything, it could all be an illusion, but the real reality comes from within, that there's a new world that's within us that was given to us by God, and once we enter into that world, we live the real deal?
See, philosophically speaking, you and I are currently in the Garden of Eden, and you're offering me a really tasty apple, and frankly, you're not wearing anything, Eve. Right? Because what you're doing is you are appealing to, and listen, it's perfectly fair for you to do this. I'll be completely honest with how tempting that is.
Yeah.
It's enormously tempting. I mean, you really should be wrapped in a snake Natasha Kinski style. You know, I'm just going to enjoy that image for a moment. But it's really tempting, man. It's really tempting because that makes so much make sense in the world, that we have an inner reality. We have a ghost within that lives forever.
Yes.
That is one of God's flock that gravitates towards virtue, that is tempted by sin and is going to live forever. That is a great temptation for me. I love my family. I love my friends. And I love the world. Although, of course, you know, if I'm immortal in my soul, then I leave the world behind. But at least I get to be reunited with friends and family. And you and I can continue this conversation, perhaps on a cloud. But philosophically speaking, can't get there. Can't get to the deeper reality is something that neither has logical consistency nor impresses itself on our senses. That is the big challenge. I get the temptation. I mean, I'm really there with you. And, you know, part times I think I'm trembling on the brink because it's a really, really tasty apple.
Yeah.
But the apple in philosophy, the knowledge of good and evil, the knowledge of right and wrong, of existence and non-existence, it stays in rational consistency and the evidence of the senses.
Yeah.
And that, and now, there are some philosophers who would certainly agree with you, though, which is why I wanted to sort of say my philosophy. I mean, I think it's the better philosophy to go with empiricism, like evidence of the senses. But there are a lot of philosophers, sometimes even the majority of philosophers, who would agree with you that what we see tangibly, you know, like my sweater and the microphone and all of that, that's just a shadow.
Yes.
It's like a pale reflection of the true existence that is spiritual, that is higher, that is aspirational, and is not coarsened by just this gross material flesh bag that we walk around in.
It really is. I realize that the world itself is an illusion of the real world that is within us. And when Christ came, sent by his Father God, he created a new world, because the old world is doomed. It's still the Old Testament. It's doomed. That's why you see so much destruction in the old world. But Christ created the New Testament, and the New Testament is hidden within us. And it's only for those who can admit that they are wrong, playing God, judging one another, judging themselves. Anyone who has anger is judging, and to judge is to hate. And when you hate your fellow man or yourself, you're separated from the true world, and you're now living in the Old Testament, which is still the world around you. And in that, there's nothing but suffering, fear, and doubt, and worry, and insecurity, diseases, and all kinds of things. But you can't enter into this new world. And the only way you're going to enter there, you have to admit that you're playing God, that you're not God, and that you're playing him. And that's what it means to repent, to play God. And then overcome your mother and return to the Father. When you love the Father, your earthly Father, you can love the true God, the real Father. I want to ask, do you believe that human beings are in a fallen state?
Ooh. Can you give me an easier question? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. That's fair. That's fair. No, I mean, I don't want to be glib. You know,
right.
I mean, I have a kind of motor mouth and a motor brain, so I want to sort of slow that down, because it's a very powerful question, right? And of course, I'm guessing, looking over your right shoulder at the title of your show, that
right.
You know, you're going with the plus on that, my little tick box on the fallen state. I think that since the fall of Christianity, as an effect in the West, but I think for a lot of younger people, right? I know in England, it's like less than 10% of young people are going to church.
Yeah, it's the same way here.
Probably more to mosques than churches these days. But I think that religion is better than Darwinism. And atheists, by taking down religion without giving people something to climb out of the flesh pit of Darwinism, have put people philosophically into a fallen state. See, we can't be animals because we are human beings. The only thing we can be is either human beings, which means we have a higher aspiration. We work with universals. It's one thing I love about Jesus, is that Jesus was the only religious figure, at least in the Abrahamic tradition, that said, it's not my team and it's not your team. Right. So in Judaism, there's the chosen people, and they have less moral obligation to non-Jews. In Islam, they have less, if not negative, moral obligations toward non-Muslims. But with Jesus, it's like everybody.
Yes.
It's universal. So Jesus is the closest thing to philosophy that any religious figure has ever been. And that, to me, is a very powerful thing, which is why I kind of ran like this weird thing. You ever have these dreams where you run away from something and then you end up just right back where you started?
Yes.
And so, like, I'm running full tilt from Christianity in pursuit of universals, and then I find that my universals end up matching a lot of what Christ talks about. It's like, good job running away to exactly where you started. Or it's like that old poem, there should be no end to our journeying, and that the purpose of our journeying shall be to return to the place that we started, but know it really for the first time. So I think that we are in a fallen state. But to me, the fallen state is distance from virtue, distance from the essence of humanity, which is to not simply live the life of the flesh. We can't do that because we have this brain, we have this capacity for these amazing abstractions. You know, we can send a spaceship to Jupiter. We can send a little bath escape to the bottom of the Mariana Trench. We can go and explore the Titanic miles underwater. No animals can do that. We can't just be animals. We're either humans or we're inhuman.
Yes.
In other words, we are the kind of monsters that I grew up around or who grew up in charge of me. And so my concern very much is either we get back to Christianity or we get forward or somewhere where we're not just pursuing this hedonism. Because while you're young and pretty and fit and all of that, hedonism looks like a lot of fun. But, you know, it was nice that you referred to me as a young man. I don't feel that often on the internet these days. But it is really the case that, you know, you've seen this too. And we've talked about this before. You see this arc of people's lives, you know, and this, you know, you avoid responsibility. You avoid taking ownership of your life. You avoid being a good person. When you're young, it looks like you're free.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then what happens is, like, there's this arc and people begin to fall. It usually happen around 30, maybe 35. They begin to fall. And I'm old enough now to have seen this arc, and all the people who were like, wow, they're totally free when they're young, it's like they're now trapped in ways that is really horrible. Now, I saw that on the downside when I was born. My mom was like in her late 20s when I was born. So by the time I kind of knew stuff, she was in her mid-30s. And I really saw that decline that happens when you pursue lust, when you pursue greed, when you pursue defensiveness, when you can never admit fault, which is one of the big problems. For men, we're addicted to status and power. Women are addicted often to right fighting and, you know, not admitting fault and so on.
That's for
sure. I really saw that decay. Now, that decay, man, that is a fallen state, and that is, to me, it's a hell that people live in, and that it was always terrifying to me.
So are you saying that, yes, we are in a fallen state, but not we have not fallen away from God, but fallen away from the mind?
Well, I would say that we have fallen away from universals. We have to, you know, there's that old song, like, you got to serve something. You got to serve somebody.
Yes.
You got to serve somebody. If you only serve your own lusts, you are circular and decaying and you're inhuman. Because we are built for so much more than satisfying our lusts. You know, you go see a monkey in a zoo, you can see it humping its water dish. You know, you give it a banana, it's perfectly happy. You know, zoo, I'm thrilled to be in a zoo. This is wonderful. We're not so good with that kind of stuff. We don't do well in captivity. We have a yearning for something greater than tickling our neurons with whatever pleasure happens to be there, right? And, you know, like, there are these experiments with animals. You get, like, they peck a pellet and they get, like, they peck a button and they get a pellet and it makes them feel good. They'll just keep doing that all day. And that's, you know, I guess it's okay. They don't really seem to go crazy from it. But human beings, we're not built for that. We're built for something so much larger than the body.
You notice that human being in that fallen state, we act like animals. We do what animals do. We'll hump a hole in a tree if it look right. In that fallen state, we hate one another. We judge one another.
But that's the thing, though. Sorry to interrupt, but the fallen state is fascinating to me because animals, they don't end up hating each other. Like, they'll prey on each other and so on. And that's why we can't be animals, because we always have to make some moral justification for whatever it is that we're doing. And you see this, of course, on Twitter all the time. When I talk to women about the responsibility to think about, not milking their sexual attractiveness just for money and just for power over men, but actually applying it to being a mom, to raising the next generation of wonderful children, to taking that great gift of life that their parents gave to them and paying it forward, not just selfishly consuming it like some kid who inherits $1 million and blows it on renting yachts and stupid drugs and things like that,
right.
Like, to take this gift. And when I talk about that, the amount of anger, the amount of fear, the amount of rage that comes raining down on me. I mean, you know, you get kind of used to it, you get kind of battle hardened after a while, but it's wild, Jesse. I mean, you just say to women, okay, this is kind of the purpose of life. The only reason there is life is that for, you know, whatever period of time, animals had babies, humans had babies, they raised them under very difficult circumstances, you know, plagues and war and famine and so on. and you try to remind people what it is to be human rather than serving your vanity, serving your narcissism, serving your greed for attention, but actually putting it to some productive use like having a family. And then you remind women, of course, that it's all fun and games. You know, women start off rich and end up poor, and men start off poor and end up rich, right? It's all fun and games till you hit 35 or 40, yeah. And then poof, you become invisible to the male gaze, and everything you complained about, all that male attention you complained about, vanishes, and now you complain that there's no male attention. Women, and then it's too late to fix.
They can't help themselves, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But let me ask one last thing about this fallen state situation. Do you believe that, I mean, what do you believe? Do you believe that we are, in reality, we are a spirit that lives in a body, or do you believe that we are our body?
I wouldn't use the word spirit because I'm afraid, to be annoying, that's philosophically imprecise.
Yeah.
Could mean a drink too. No, I'm kidding. Right. So no, what I mean is that we are built for abstractions. We are built for seeking something higher and more universal than ourselves. And that's the only thing that makes us human, because that's the only thing we do that's different from the animals. You know, animals have sex, they eat, they sleep, they fight, they play, they do all of that stuff. But the one thing they don't do is universalize, work with abstractions, with concepts that are greater than themselves.
Interesting.
And so if we reject that which makes us most human, and for you, this is the pursuit of the divine, this is the pursuit of virtue, this is the reunion with God.
Yes.
For me, this is the pursuit of a virtue in a philosophical context and having courage against the mob to save the mob from their own lusts and so on. We are always tempted by the flesh, but we are only defined by the mind, by the universals, I think what you would call the spirit.
Do you have peace within? Do you have perfect peace?
Well, that's a pretty high standard, man. Perfect peace. You know, if I say yes, you know what people are going to do?
What?
They're going to find every single, I can see this, you know, the trolls, they live in my head in a good way, you know, very helpful, right? So here's what's going to happen. I'm going to say, why, yes, Jesse, I have perfect peace. And then people are going to clip all the foaming at the mouth rants that I have on the planet. I'm going to say, that's not really perfect peace, man. I would say that I do not have perfect peace. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I don't know if you want to know the reasons why or whether you just want the answer. I don't want to over
filibuster. Well, I do want to know the reason why you don't have it. But first, I want to know, what does it feel like not to have peace within? What is that like? What is that feeling? What happens if you're not having that?
Okay, can you... I'm sorry to answer a question with a question, which my aunt always told me was very rude, but I'll do it anyway.
No, no problem.
Describe to me, please, this perfect peace of what it feels like to you.
It is no conflict within. You have no conflict. You have no doubt, no fear, no worry, no insecurities, no second thoughts, no... your mind, body, and soul within is at peace. And it doesn't matter what's happening in the world around you or what's happening to you. It's just a situation. And because of that peace, you can see that it's not happening to you. It's just a situation that you have to deal with. You don't identify with the situation at all, no matter what it is.
You know, that apple just got three times bigger. I'm just just pointing that out. And your snake slipped a little. Okay, but don't you feel a little bit like you're at war? I mean, this is the fascinating thing, right? Because I know you're fighting for a particular viewpoint, often against significant odds, suppression, deplatforming, hostility, and all of that. So the perfect peace combined with being at war seems kind of tricky in my mind.
Well, there is a war happening, and that war is a battle between good and evil. In our mind, it's an evil battle against the good within the soul of our belly, in our real self. And that war is happening through other people as well to try to destroy the good that's in you. But if you realize that from within yourself, you're not at battle with that war, but the spirit, between the evil and the good is at battle with one another. But if you identify with the evil, it's going to feel as though you're at war. And when people call me names and they shadow ban me, they try to go after me, it's not, they're not against me personally. They're not against the person they think they are. But the spirit, which is evil, is battling just the spirit which is within me. And that's the spirit of good, which is of God. And they're working to defeat one another. But if you let that happen without having an opinion about it or judging it or identifying with it, you will find that you will always win the battle over evil with good.
That's very interesting. Of course, most people, when they attack, say, you or me, they focus on the person. And
right.
It's always frustrating to me because right. I'm like, forget about me. I mean, I would rather be completely invisible in this process. Like,
yes.
For me, virtue, a good life, a happy life, a responsible life, it's like this beautiful view. Now, the best glassmakers, you don't even see the glass. You know, bad glassmakers, yeah. They call this ripples and they got hairs in there. And, you know, right. Like the candies and cigarette ashes that they dropped in this terrible glass. And you can't see the view because all this crap in the way. And for me, I'm like, look, I want to show people this view of philosophy, of truth, of virtue, courage, responsibility, all those good things. And people are like, I just want to look at the glass and criticize the glass. I'm like,
right.
Look at the glass.
Yeah,
look at the view. And so I think what you're saying there is say, there's a war of principles. There's a war of universals. There's good and evil.
Yes.
And people will always try and personalize it if they have bad intent, right? They'll try and personalize it upon you so they don't have to deal with the universals,
well,
with the
in that fallen state, they can't see, and they don't know that because they have identified either with the evil, and most people have until they overcome it. In that fallen state, they believe that it's them. They don't realize that there's another identity, another personality that's made a home in them, and it works through their mind and their feelings, and they have identified with the mind, believing that their thoughts are their own. And so if you believe your thoughts are your own, you will be controlled by it. But when you start to realize that you are not your thoughts and you don't create thoughts, then the real you observe the not you, and that's when you can win the battle.
Okay. Right.
But what do you think about that? Do you believe that you are your thoughts?
Boy, we're really getting deep here. That's good. That's good. No, that's what we're for. Right, that's what we're for. That I am my thoughts. I used to believe that a lot more. Now I believe that there's a bedrock of identity that was not created by language, existed prior to language, and seems kind of impervious to language, if that makes any kind
yes.
of sense. Like there's an essence to me that produces language, but it's not produced by language in the
yes.
sense that there's a painter who produces a painting, but the painting doesn't produce the painter.
So you do not believe that you are your thoughts.
No.
And you don't create thoughts.
Well, okay, so let me give you an analogy here, which hopefully will not confuse me more than it illustrates the point. But so let's say you play a sport, like ping pong, say some silly sport, right? Now, if you practice ping pong for a long time, then you'll get pretty good.
Right.
And so if you win a ping pong game, you've earned that ping pong game, but not in the moment. You've earned that ping pong game in the preparation, right? In the years that you spent practicing ping pong or whatever it is, right?
Right.
And so do you say, well, have you produced that victory in the ping pong game? Well, yes, but not in the moment. It's the whole history of leading up to it that has prepared for it. So I create thoughts bubble up in my head, like, I do this at night when I'm sort of thinking of falling asleep. It actually helped relax me. And as I just think of a particular problem or a puzzle that's the challenge for me, or I think of a debate that's coming up or whatever, and thoughts will just bubble up. I mean, people say to me all the time, like, how is it possible that you come up with these arguments, these analogies on the fly? And it's like, well, but, you know, I've been doing this for over 30 years. I mean, if I'm not good at it by now, I should be doing something else, right?
Right.
And so I don't feel that I produce thoughts in the moment any more than I think I win ping pong in the moment. But it is the history of thinking that gives me that facility to produce these thoughts in the moment. So I can't sort of say yes or no, because I did make the choice to pursue philosophy for many years, although you could also say that philosophy kind of grabbed me like some sort of skyhook. Like I first started reading it and I was like, yes, yes, yes. That's my peace of mind, by the way.
Right.
And I loved it so much that it was like, I mean, I love free will and I constantly am arguing for free will. But I was thinking just the other day, did I really have free will around philosophy, given how much I responded to it with such joy and such pleasure that has sustained it in me for, oh man, I was just doing this calculation the other day. So I'm 53, about 17. So yeah, like 30 plus years, 35 years or so. So I am not philosophy, obviously. I produce philosophy, but philosophy also produced me, if that makes any sense.
I understand that. Do you have negative thoughts sometime at night before bed or any time during the day? You have negative thoughts?
I'm going to be annoying and just ask you to define what you mean by negative thoughts.
You know, some people feel that they're not worthy, or they feel that fear or doubt or worry, or they feel judged. When you're alone and no one is watching, you can feel like a nobody or nothing. So you have to grab a book or make a phone
right.
call or go eat some ice cream or smoke some pot or something, you know.
Right.
Do you ever get those thoughts?
I don't ever feel not worthy.
Right. Well, I'm just giving you
an
example.
I don't ever feel insignificant or not worthy. There are certainly times where I feel afraid, and there are certainly times in the past where I felt fearful for the future.
And do you believe that you're creating those thoughts from the past, or do you create them in the present?
I'll give you an example, right? So my mother is German. I'm half German, and I have a lot of affinity for the country, although I haven't been there since I was very little.
Yes.
And, you know, Germany is a mess.
Right.
And it's hard to see how Germany can continue for very long, given, and we don't have to get into details, I just want to say it's a big, big deal, problems with immigration, with lack of babies, with cultural problems, with the self-hatred that's still being foisted on Germans who weren't responsible for the Second World War and all of that.
Right.
And I was like, I got to do something about Germany. And it's like, okay, what are you going to do about Germany? It's like, okay, well, I'll do some videos about Germany and so on. And I get all these messages from people in Germany. I get them from Ireland. I get them from all over the world. Save us, save us, save us. Do this, do this, do this. Because, you know, you've got a big platform. You've got a good ability to describe
right.
things. And you're willing to take risks, wisely or unwisely, that few other people are willing to take. So save us. Do something. And I would take that on. And I would sometimes have a positive effect. Sometimes it would feel like I didn't have a positive effect. I never really felt like I had a negative effect, but trying to control political decisions on the other side of the world or even next door is kind of like a recipe for frustration, if that makes sense. So I had to kind of consciously say, look, I'll say my piece. I'll say my piece. I'll promote it as much as possible, but I can't own the outcome.
Yeah.
Because that's going to drive me crazy.
Yeah.
It's going to exhaust me. It's going to burn me out. So having to let go of desperately wanting an outcome. Oof. Well, you know that. I mean, look, you want everyone to get to heaven. You want single moms to take more responsibility. You want people to stop hating their parents, but you can't make them do it.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, so I would say that, and that still happens to me from time to time. It happened to me recently with Ireland. It is happening to me with coronavirus to some degree at the moment. I really, really want people to listen to sense, to evidence, to my caring for the world, and, you know, some do, a lot don't.
Yeah, that's true. Let me ask, did you grow up close with your father and mother?
No.
And
no, my father left when I was a couple of months old, and I saw him only intermittently. He had a very troubled existence, a very successful man in many ways professionally, but a very troubled existence in his mind and his heart. And I was, it's funny, you know, so with my mother, I should really have brought a couch to the interview. But so with my mother, I have an odd affinity with my mother, in that my mother is very creative. She's very intellectual. She helped me a lot with my novel writing and with my poetry. And her father was a writer, and her uncle was a writer, and intellectuals are all over the place on my mom's side of the family. And I always reminded my mother of her father, who she loved. And so she was kind of close in a way, but she just had this crazy temper that would just erupt in violence to the point where I literally would fear for my life.
Yeah.
I tried running away when I was like 4 years old. And I mean, I've said this before on my show. She like picked me up and beat me against this metal door to the point where I had to go limp, or I could have died. I could have, right? So I did appreciate my mother's enthusiasm for the intellectual work that I wanted to do, and she took it very seriously, and that helped me a lot. But it was, again, kind of like defusing a bomb. Like, I want to get the good stuff, but I don't want to trip over the rage, you know, in her that, you know, came out of probably her experiences growing up in the Second World War, with horrible things happening to her in Germany from both the German government and the Russians who came in, who were horrible to children and little girls in particular. So I was happy in some ways with the fact that my mother took what I wanted to do seriously, which laid some foundation for what it is that I do, Jesse.
Yes, but yes,
man, she was terrifying. Oh, did you, man, you
is
really
she still
had to
living?
Be careful. Sorry?
Is she still living?
She is still living.
And have you forgiven her for traumatizing you in that way?
I don't know if the longer the pause, the worse the answer, but I would say, that's a tough call. So I will say that I have come to peace with it, in that I rarely think of it. I will use it, like if you bring it up, I will talk about it. Right. It's not something where I'm scarred. It doesn't interfere with the pleasure of my day, and I can go for quite, you know, days and days and days, or sometimes even weeks, without really thinking about it at all. You know, when you're a dad and you're raising a daughter, as I do with a stay-at-home dad, you know, she's going to have questions, or there's going to be situations which remind you. So, but for the most part, it's not in my mind, and it's not something that disturbs me in the present. But here's the challenge. I believe that forgiveness is something that needs to be earned. And while I have had in the past many conversations with my mother about what happened, and not screaming at her, not yelling at her, just, you know, this is what happened. And, you know, I think that it's important we talk about it. And, you know, she just denied that it happened, or would blame me, or would find some other escape route to not take any responsibility. And so I will not say that I have forgiven her, because there are other people in my life who've done me wrong, just as I've done wrong to people in my life. And I will ask forgiveness, and I will make amends, and I will make reparations, and I will promise to do better, and really stick to that promise. And so for me, the people in my life who've earned my forgiveness, I will give it freely, just as I wish to be forgiven when I've made amends.
Yes.
The people who've not made amends, I come to terms with it. I release them, in a sense, from the requirement to earn it. But I can't use the same word as the people who honorably do earn forgiveness, if that makes sense.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying, no, I have not forgiven my mother because she has not earned it.
Right.
And how do you earn forgiveness?
Well, that's all the stuff I was taught as a Christian growing up. You have to admit, your sin. You have to apologize genuinely. You have to work to make amends, if at all possible. And you have to really work hard to not repeat the behavior.
Is it possible that that was a wrong teaching?
Well, I suppose, philosophically speaking, it's always possible, yes.
Because forgiveness is not based on the other person admitting that they did wrong, or coming to you and apologizing for it, or anything. When you in the scriptures, it says, if you have aught, I mean, if you have anger against anyone, you go and forgive them, and I, meaning God, will forgive you. And when they don't have to admit anything. And when you forgive them, he will forgive you, and then return you back to your natural state of being before you were traumatized by that person. But so you can't earn it. He okay, doesn't well, even on, tell you.
Hang on, sorry to interrupt you, man. Let's just back up a sec here. Okay. So let's say my mom's in the room, right?
Right.
I just wet myself. Okay, so let's just say my mom's in the room. And in this, the way that you talk about it, I forgive her, though she hasn't done anything to earn it. In fact, she continues to deny and, right. and make things difficult, right?
Of course.
So I forgive her, but then God forgives me. But what's God forgiving me for? I'm the victim.
That's a good question. That's a whole wrong question, man. That is an amazing question. What it is, unforgiveness is hatred. And hatred is judgment. And when you judge, you're playing God and you're separated from the true God within you. And whomever you resent, you become like that person and they control you. Let's say that your mother did those horrible things to you and you became angry about it. In that very moment, you lost yourself and became like your mother, and that made you subject to her, and she still can control you whenever she wants to. And let's say you move back to Germany and leave mama in America. Whatever woman you get involved with is mama because you're attracted to what you hate. And you'll find yourself, whenever you get in a relationship with different women, you become the boy and they become the mama. You won't be able to be honest with the woman. You won't, because you're afraid of hurting her feelings or don't know how to deal with her overreaction because you were never told how to overcome your mother. And so she become your God, and every woman you get involved with is your God. You become subject to them. That's why when you don't forgive, you're controlled by that. But when you do forgive, you're separated from that. And now you're controlled by what is right within you. You are yourself, not subject to anyone else, whether they forgive or not or admit it. But they can't, there's nothing that human beings can do to earn your forgiveness. You need to have God forgive you. That's why he said, forgive them and I will forgive you. Meaning stop playing God by judging people, but be honest with them.
Oh, so I would be forgiven for the sin of being angry at my mother, is that right?
Right, because she couldn't help herself. But as a kid, you didn't understand that. Because
okay, but how do you know she couldn't help herself?
Because,
I mean, I'm a big free will guy. So, I mean, if she doesn't have moral responsibility, then I was basically raised by an angry robot, so to speak.
You were. Absolutely. Your mother didn't have a child just to destroy it. But because she became like her mother, she has the identity of her mother. She hates her mother. That spirit, I call it a spirit, is living in her and is driving her. And exactly what happened to her, she did it to you. And it goes from generation to generation. Unless you forgive so you can overcome that and become yourself again, and then you would not do that to your children. You could start a new generation.
That is powerfully spoken. And I'm going to be, again, kind of annoying and say, but, right? Because, you know, I got to put up my dukes here for
absolutely.
This stuff, right?
So, I'm glad. Absolutely.
Okay. I have not recreated my history with my child. I mean, I've never raised my voice at her. I've never hit her. I've never called her names. And we have a great relationship.
Are you married?
Yes.
I bet your wife is doing it.
My wife is wonderful, and nothing has been recreated to my knowledge from,
now, would
from
you
what
think,
happened in the past. I'm sorry?
What happens when you're honest with your wife about her anger and that she needs to back away from your kid and be patient with your child? And have you spoken to her about those things?
She doesn't have much of a temper, but I think, like a lot of moms, she's taken the overprotective thing just a little bit too far. You know, you kind of need the man to remind
that's
mom that the kid is growing up and needs to, you know, got to stretch out that umbilical and eventually cut it. So, she's pretty good with listening to that.
Does she take
a bit of repetition sometimes.
Sorry? Yeah. You're married to your mother. She may not be as dramatic the way your mother did you, but what your wife is doing to your daughter is still traumatizing her in the same manner.
I got to push back on that pretty hard, man. I don't think that's the case. My wife and my mother, you know, I could say that they're complete opposites, but then you got that problem of them meeting around the back, so to speak. But so for me, I think the way that I escaped the cycle was this is always my fear. And, you know, I don't mind getting personal here because I feel like I'm half in confessional anyway, so that's fine. But here's here's what it is for me, Jesse, that my great fear was what I call the great dial, right? So, you know, like you get an amp on your guitar or whatever, right? There are all these different dials, right?
Right.
You get a bass, treble, and volume and all that. Yeah. And you can move them all independently, right? You can change your bass, treble, and all that. And they're all tied together, right? So for me, there's one dial called free will for human beings. And if I can't just move it for myself without moving it for everyone else. Because that's my common humanity. I don't want to divide humanity into different groups, different species, different whatever, right? I want us all to be human because that's philosophy. That's, you know, it's all got to be, it's got to be for everyone. It's not just for me, for blacks, for whites, it's for everyone.
Right.
So for me, there's this dial. Now, if I move it for my mom, it moves for me. And if I move it for me, it moves for my mom or you or my dad or whoever, right? It moves for everyone. Now, if I say my mom, her free will goes down to zero, then what happens in my heart, Jesse? I feel that move, man. I feel that free will goes down to zero for me. And having a free will of zero is just about the most terrifying thing that I can think of, because then I'm run by history and I'm going to recreate everything that happened in the past.
Amazing.
I got to have. I'll, you know, this stupid movie, like this goes up to 11, right? This, I want my free will to go up to 11, right? And so when I dial my free will up to 11, maximum responsibility plus, 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 it goes up for everyone. Everyone gets maximum free will. And that's how I change history. But then if you say, well, your mom had no control, then it's like you're taking this dial down, but you're taking it down for me, for you. And if we don't have any free will, then you and I are just ping pong balls bouncing around. It's not even really a conversation,
right,
if that makes sense.
Do you believe that your mother wanted to treat you that way, her own son? You think that she wanted to do that?
Oh, well, you know, motivation is always pretty complex. I would say that empirically, she chose it to the alternative of not doing it. I will also say that she had the complete capacity to not do it.
And
because
so if
when
she
we
had
were
that,
in public,
why would she do it to you, her son, if she had the capacity not to do it?
But I know that she didn't. She had the capacity to not do it because she never did it in public.
But
right? She never did it with teachers around. She would never belt me in front of a cop. She would, like, wherever there were negative repercussions to her,
right,
for abusing me, she found the magical ability to refrain from that abuse. Unfortunately, her love for me or my love for her was not enough of a motivation, as your average random stranger who might cause her trouble if he saw her beating her son. I was not enough. And I know it's not personal to me. I was an object, in a sense, for her to vent her anger on. Like, you know, in the saying that, you know, some guy kicks a chair over because he's angry. He doesn't hate the chair. He's just kind of acting out his immature anger. I was just like that chair. It wasn't personal to me. It would have been the same with any other kid, for sure. But because I knew she had the capacity to not be abusive, that means to me she is responsible for being
abusive. I see what you're saying. Because she never did it in public,
yeah,
only in private, that made you, cause you to believe that she had the capacity to do it and not to do it.
It's sort of like, you know, if somebody's epileptic and they have a seizure,
right,
they can't possibly not have that seizure.
Oh, I
you know,
get
that,
you.
That's not a choice. That's just like whatever, right? But if somebody, you know, punches you, the moment the teacher leaves the room, then they have the capacity to not punch you. They're just waiting until they can get away with it.
That's amazing. We don't have the time today, but I want to challenge you on the free will thing, because we don't. I'll just say, we don't have a free will. I know you believe we do have a free will, but we don't have a free will. We are influenced either by evil or by good. It depends on which God that we serve. And in the fallen state, we're influenced by evil. But when you overcome that fallen state, you're influenced by good. We don't have a free will. Let me ask,
well, you got to choose. You want to encourage people to choose good over evil, right?
You don't choose it. It chooses you when you can admit that you are evil and that you are wrong, but you can't help yourself. Then you could overcome it. But I got to ask you this. Have you ever done anything that, quote unquote, was negative or wrong to others or to yourself, and you say, wow, I can't believe I did that. That's crazy. I would never do it again. And you go along for a week or two, a month, and you find yourself doing it again, and you can't believe you're doing it again. And you're like, wow, I'm not going to do it. You say, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it, while on your way to do it. Have you ever done that?
You mean like, say, checking Twitter in the middle of the night? I would say that there have been occasional times where I have relapsed into a not-so-ideal habit. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it wasn't something that you wanted to do, right? But you were
I would say that it was kind of rolling the dice. You know, if you wake up in the middle of the night and you know, if you're having a little bit of trouble getting back to sleep, Twitter is probably not the best way to soothe yourself off to La La Land. So, yeah, it's kind of rolling the dice in that
but
if
how
you just
about,
lie there stewing. Go ahead.
How about other things that to others, as you've been, you know, you've been in the world for 50 years, I guess, and have there, along the way, have there been things you've done to others or even to yourself, and you say you would not do it again, and you knew it was wrong, at least you judge it as wrong, but you find yourself doing it again anyway. You can't believe that you're doing it again, other than Twitter.
Well, yeah, I would say not lately, but certainly when I was younger, there were negative habits that were hard to shake, for sure.
And so was that your free will, or were you being influenced from within?
Well, I mean, that is sort of to say that there's a distinction between the two. I mean, I think free will is kind of like a muscle. Like, you need to, you know, if you want to lift 1,000 pounds, you got to work out for a long time. You're going to just go and lift 1,000 pounds, your arms would come out, right? I mean, you just walk around like some knight in the Monty Python movie. So I think for me, when it came to breaking bad habits, it's kind of like you got to work up to it. Like, you got to work up to lifting 1,000 pounds. So yeah, there's some repetition, but you kind of break free if you keep working at it. You can often break free from those negative habits. You know, like, I mean, I dated a lot and irresponsibly when I was young. I chose women for shallow reasons. I didn't go for qualities of character, and I didn't evaluate women for long-term stability and so on. I just, you know, followed, well, I think we all know what I followed, right? And so that took a long time to lose that habit, to outgrow that habit. That took, you know, a fair amount of self-discipline, a fair amount of punching myself in the crotch with a icicle or something like that. So that took a while, but that's kind of breaking orbit from my entire history. It's like learning another language. It doesn't just happen overnight. You got to really work at it.
Is it possible that the reason you were doing those things is because you resented your mother for what had happened to you? And by resenting your mother, you became subject to women. Because you resented your mother, you resent all women. So you became subject to them. And so you went around having sex with them, trying to find something that was lost.
Well, I guess when it comes to our own existence, Jesse, we, you know, one of the most fundamental questions outside of religious questions, one of the most fundamental questions is, why did my father choose my mother? Right? That's a very fundamental question for us, right?
Yeah.
Because why we're here.
Yeah.
Why you're here, it's why we're all here. Why did my father choose my mother? And I think where the repetition was in the sort of fallen state paradigm was this, that my father did not choose my mother for her qualities of character, but because she was a very attractive woman. And she was. Great features and all that, slender and so on. And she's smart and she's a good conversationalist in many ways and all of that. But he didn't choose her for moral qualities of character. And so it was animal fertility markers, if that makes any sense. It was real mammal stuff. It wasn't anything to do with the higher self or virtue. And so I think we're kind of programmed to do what our fathers did because we're only around because our fathers were successful and we want to reproduce. So we're programmed to do what our fathers did. And so I think for me, breaking out of the orbit of just choosing women based on looks or charisma or wit or things like that, which don't have any moral content.
Is it possible
that was very much, well, it worked for my dad, and that's why I'm here, so who am I to do different?
Is it possible your father chose your mother because he was attracted to what he hated, because he resented his mother?
Well, I don't know enough about him to say that for sure, but I'll certainly put that in the square round of possibility.
Do you love your father?
No.
You don't love your father?
No.
And why not?
Because parenthood is a verb. It's not a noun. I mean, he was like a guy who donated some sperm, took off, and I rarely saw him, if ever.
But what did he do to you that caused you not to love him?
He failed to protect me from my mother.
So he ran from your mother, not from you. And you're right, he did fail to protect you from your mother. And that's because he was married to his mother. Your mother became his mother. And he couldn't deal with his mother, so he didn't know how to deal with your mother. And so he left her. He didn't leave you. But your mother never said, you know what, your father loved you, but he couldn't handle me. She made you believe that she was the victim and he was the victimizer, but it wasn't true. And that's why you don't
love
him.
Well, the female sort of playing the victim thing is a very, very powerful thing. It's very, very hard for men to overcome that, right? Because, you know, if my mother was going to be honest, she would say, you know, I kind of chose the wrong guy. He probably chose the wrong woman.
Yes.
I was angry. He was angry. We kind of blew it. And, you know, now we got a kind of a wreckage of a family. It's not your fault. We made mistakes. But of course, if she was the kind of person to do that, the marriage probably wouldn't have ended to begin with. So it's this kind of, I think what you're talking about, this machinery, it's like this closed loop.
Women are not going
to
do that.
Be given who they were.
Women would not do that. The hardest thing in the world for a woman to do is to admit she's wrong. She can point out everybody else, the men, the women, the cat, the dog, the grass, the paint on the house. But because of her ego, she would not admit she's wrong. She'll send you to hell before she admits she's wrong.
Well, let me just look at Hillary Clinton dragged America through years of this Russia collusion conspiracy theory because she just couldn't admit that she was wrong about her reading of the American public and what they wanted.
I'm so out of time, but I got to ask you this, Stefan. Do you have a right not to love your father?
Sure.
You do.
Yeah, I mean, love, my formulation is love is our involuntary response to virtue if we're virtuous.
So,
and my father would need to display significant virtues, which I'm open to hearing and still within the realm of possibility, in order for me to experience the involuntary sensation of love that responds to that behavior.
Is he still living?
Yes.
Have you ever asked him, why did you leave?
Yes.
And what did he say?
It's hard to get a straight answer from people with a bad conscience, as you know, right?
Yes.
And you know what? I just realized that I may not be giving you a straight answer here, which kind of puts me in that category. Not only people have bad conscience. So my father has this theory of resources, that you only have a certain amount of resources that you can apply in life, and he was just out of resources. He was tired of fighting. He was tired of the combat. He couldn't work where they were because he was trained in another country, so he left for Africa, and he worked in Africa for his career, and I was not, of course, in Africa except occasionally. And so it was a whole series of impossibilities combined with his lack of emotional resources to be able to deal with the situation. That's mostly what I got out of the conversation with him. Conversations, plural.
So you feel about your father the way that your mother feel about him?
No. I do have a lot of sympathy for my father. And listen, I have a lot of sympathy for my mother, too.
I mean, she had the kind of childhood
that made Mike's look like a paradise. I mean, her entire world was burning up in the Second World War, and her entire civilization was being bombed into extinction. And her grandmother was died in bombing raids. I mean, things that you know, I had a rough childhood, man. It was nothing like that. So I do have a lot of sympathy.
But yet you have not gone to either one of them and forgiven them, realizing that it doesn't make it right what they did to you, but they can help it. And yet you have not gone to either one of them and forgiven them, knowing that if they could have done better, they would have. And you understand your mother's background, you understand your father's background, but yet you won't forgive them. Don't you find that interesting?
It's interesting because, you know, you're like, don't judge. And you say, it's interesting. I unfortunately, or fortunately, it would break my moral standards to forgive people who haven't earned it. At the same time, sitting there stewed in anger about things in the past that can't be changed in the present is a complete waste of time and energy. So it is very, very important to come to a resolution about history to free up your energies for a more positive future. But to me, that doesn't have the moral requirement to forgive people who haven't earned it any more than I would pay someone for a job he didn't do.
Amazing. And so do you realize the past doesn't exist except in your mind? And so you, when those things happen to you, they happen then. They're not happening now, but you're reliving them by thinking it, and it feels like the past. You're still living something that doesn't exist because you won't forgive and live in the present.
Well, but you might be shoehorning me a little bit into the theory because I have broken the cycle. I've been happily married for 17 years. I'm a good dad and a stay-at-home dad. And, you know, maybe you could say I've gone a little bit too far to the other extreme. My dad went to Africa and I barely leave the house. So, you know, it's like maybe the pendulum swung a little bit too far. But, you know, I think if it's swinging in the right direction, that's good.
What's the difference between, because of time, what's the difference between men and women? What is a man?
A man is a provider and a protector. And unfortunately, both of those roles have been usurped by the government and by a terribly toxic popular culture. Men can't protect their women anymore. We got open borders. We got rising crime rates in many areas. And men can't protect their families from terrible decisions by the government, which invite disease and debt and chaos into the environment. So men have been kind of emasculated that we can't protect. And through the welfare state, we're all becoming stepfathers involuntarily to a lot of irresponsible women. So because we have to provide for everyone else's family, or we're forced to, we can't provide for our own in many situations. So protector and provider, the two things which I think really define men, have been really bypassed by the modern state. And by that, I don't just mean the fallen state, but the government state as well.
What is a woman?
Well, a woman is a courageous nurturer. Has always been sort of the way that I have characterized women, well, not always, but more recently in my mind, that there's takes a lot of courage, I think. Women have to surrender themselves to trust in a man because women are so vulnerable through pregnancy and breastfeeding and early childhood dependence that they really have to be courageous in surrendering to not the authority in a sense like you boss him around, but just trusting a man. It's really, really a tough thing to do. I'll never have to trust my wife in the way that she has to trust me to have kids and all of that. And so there is that courageous side of women and the nurturing side. And unfortunately, a lot of that nurturing has been stripped from women as well, if they've been convinced that somehow working in an office is better than caring for their own children. And I think that's really taken a lot of the richness out of femininity these days.
You mentioned, and I got to run, I have another interview coming up, and everybody looking at me, and I knew I was going to...
We'll talk about your workaholism next time, Jesse.
Yeah.
And I will ask you about your dad. But anyway,
that's right. I knew I was going to really enjoy this coming because I have so much respect for you, and we've spoken at events together, been on your show several times, so I knew I would. You mentioned the Adam and Eve story, the snake in the Adam and Eve story, right? I believe I can see that there's a perfect order to life. And that order is God and Christ, Christ and man, man over woman, and woman over children. And what happened in that garden with the apple thing you mentioned is that Adam had a relationship with his father, and then the father created the woman for the man so that they could reproduce and all that kind of procreate and all that. And then the serpent was below the woman. And the serpent hated God, jealous of God. He wanted to be God. And the serpent tried to tempt the man to, hey, you need to turn away from your father. Your father he's no good. He's a slap maker and all that, right? But just Adam said, no, I love my father. I'm never turning. So Adam had a relationship with his father. He loved his father. He believed his father. They spoke to one another without words. It was revelation. They should just know what they're thinking. And then the serpent went to the woman and said, hey, don't listen to that man. That man is a misogynist. He's better than you. He listened to the father. He's not even a real man. He listened to his father. You can be your own woman. You can have abortions. You can not wear bras. And he kept telling the woman that, and finally the woman believed it. Because at first you're like, no, I love my husband, leave me alone. But he kept working on it until he could get her to believe in him. And then she's like, wow, my eyes are open. I can be like a man. And then she lost respect for her husband. She went back and said, hey, you can be free. Don't listen to your father. You can be like me. You can be free. Have your own mind. And Adam eventually believed the woman. And so he had no longer had a relationship with his father, but with his mother. And his mother had the relationship with the serpent. She became his god as the serpent became her god. And that order was broken. And now the woman is God over man. And Satan is the woman's god. And Christ came and reversed that order. That's why the man have to overcome the woman and return to the father, overcome the mother and return to the father to bring that order back. And then you wouldn't have all this confusion in your life, in your family life. It would still be in the world, but it wouldn't be in the new world that's inside of you. Is that possible?
Yes, and it does strike me, of course, that a lot of, in Judaism, it's a matrilineal, right? The Judaism comes from the mother, in terms of the descendants and what makes you Jewish if you're not converting. And the matriarchal aspect of Judaism, I think, has always had tensions with the patriarchal aspects of Christianity. And I guess if I understand your case correctly, Jesse, what you're saying is that Christ came to save the world from the overpowering female
yes.
that was paralyzing its forward progress.
Absolutely. And she can't help herself because she has the nature of her father, Satan. But if the men were to return to the father, if you were to return to your earthly father, realize your earthly father cannot help himself, and forgive him, you will be forgiven, and then you will return to that natural state of order, and no longer will you be subject to the woman, but she will be subject to you as you are subject to the father, because you can't love the creator unless you love your earthly father. You have to forgive him. It doesn't mean you got to hang out with him. What he did was wrong, but if you don't forgive him, you will never return to that order, and your daughter will suffer because the love comes from above, down through you to your wife and to the mother. But if it comes from below, it's going to affect your daughter in a negative way, whether you admit it or know it or not. You got to come back to that order in order for that to work. And then you will have that perfect peace on the inside and deal with your wife and your kids and everybody else with perfect love. You won't accept a wrong as a right, but you speak up about it. It's just that you won't personally be affected because you operate from the love from above instead of the fake love from below. If you notice, women don't have love. Women don't have love at all. They receive love from the man if that man has returned back to love. But women don't have love. That's why they destroy everything, because they're very insecure. They have a big ego. They have fear. They have doubt. They have worry. And so they make the world rotate around them, their children, their husband, the cat, the dog, the grass, the paint on the house, anyone. Because if they lose that, they could feel the sense of having fear and doubt. They don't feel like anything because they don't have love. And men are not giving them love. They're only giving them sex because they have not returned to their proper state of being. But women need men to be men to receive that love.
I put some asterisks on that, the not all women thing, but it just crossed my mind that you were talking about my father who lives in Ireland now, he retired, that I have an urge to fly to Ireland, but I can't get out of the country because the communists unleashed the damn virus. So I guess we'll have to wait for all of that.
Oh, amazing. That emptiness that you have, that you feel like something is still missing within, you know what I'm talking about? That's the love of your father. You're yearning for the father. Men and women yearn for their father when their mothers turn them away from their father toward her. It still leaves a void and leaves an emptiness, and nothing can fulfill it but the love of a father. You have to forgive your father.
I will certainly think over what you've said, and I really, really appreciate the time today. We must do this again more often.
It's been amazing.
It is very, very illuminating for me.
You know what? I didn't get to anything that I wanted to talk to you about, so...
Well, I wasn't filibustering, I hope. I'm trying to answer these tough questions as concisely as I can.
No, it was amazing.
But I appreciate the questions. Very, very good.
It was an amazing conversation. I have amazing respect for you. But I got to
thank you. You too, man.
I got to quickly put you on the hot seat And I need you to answer these questions as quickly as possible. And
got
then
it.
We'll be done.
The hot seat.
Is it beta or alpha for men to wear baby carriers?
It is beta.
Is Lady Gaga...
Well, you're not strong enough to hold your baby up with your biceps? Come on, it's not like a weight. It's not like a boat anchor.
That's
it's a baby.
Right. Is Lady Gaga right that people are born gay?
I think that there is some susceptibility to that particular lifestyle, but just about every gay person I've ever talked to about their childhood had something enormously traumatic and sexual occur to them at a very early age, so I think it's a combo.
Are you a fan of Elon Musk?
I don't really respect guys who smoke pot into their middle age.
Should white people make more babies?
Should white people make more babies?
Yes.
I think just about everybody should try and make more babies. But as far as the population decline goes, yeah. I mean, whites are not even at reproductive rates. And, you know, fertile white women are like in the single digits of the world population. I mean, we're like polar bears, man.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of banging and babies would not be the end of the world.
Is there any celebrity that you admire?
Wait, do you consider yourself a celebrity?
No.
Oh, look at me sucking up to the host. No, I do admire what you do, and I do admire enormously, Jesse, the moral courage that you bring to what it is that you do. Oh, celebrities that I admire? I admire them for their talents. I rarely admire them for their virtues.
Do you trust vaccines?
Do I trust vaccines?
Yes.
I would like to trust vaccines more. I think they're a little too concentrated, and I don't like the fact that it's so hard or impossible to sue vaccine companies. If they're confident in what they're doing, they should open themselves to the legal framework for restitution.
You somewhat have already answered this next, but do human beings have a free will?
Yes.
Should women be in politics?
I think that women should be free to pursue whatever they want, but they should roundly reject subsidies and pity and beta support and e-thought money and all that kind of garbage. Just compete on the open field with men, just like men have to with each other.
Is Joe Biden mentally fit to run for president?
No. I mean, based on his politics more than his stammering, but yeah, I think so.
Who is more evil, Nancy Pelosi or Hillary Clinton?
Well, Nancy Pelosi, because Hillary Clinton doesn't have power.
Did you have fun?
I had a great time, man. It's always a great pleasure to chat with you, brother.
And show that our telephones how they can listen to your show, get involved with what you're doing.
Sure. So you can follow me on Twitter at Stefan Molyneux. That's StefanMolyneux. Website is a free domain. You can get my free books and free podcasts. It's all ad-free. If you like what you hear after a while, you're certainly welcome to donate at freedomain.com/donate.
Stefan, it was amazing.
I'll put you on the hot seat next time. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I would love that.
We'll do it. Yeah, because I mostly see you making other people uncomfortable. Not that I felt uncomfortable, but I normally see you cornering somebody with that big bright flashlight of Socratic questions, and they're like, So no, that was great. All right. Take care. I will send you my source files. It was a great chat, and keep in touch. Let's do it again soon.
I will. Absolutely. God bless you, my friend.
Take care.
All right.
Bye.
Next time on The Fallen State.
As a teenager, you missed the fun of life. You didn't get a chance to party.
I missed out on the pot. I did. However, we have beer. The sources of our belief are sacred scripture and sacred tradition, which is held by the teaching authority of the Pope, given to the Pope through St. Peter by Jesus. No other church can claim that.
Why believe in a God that will not give you perfect peace?
It's not God's job to give me peace.
Do you personally believe that a woman should be a preacher?
If anybody can go and start a church, then why not? What would be the rule against it?
You don't believe God created the woman from the man?
Put it this way, I don't really care. I think you have to realize that the natural order might be different than what you think it is. I think you've learned a script and you're repeating it. You don't have facts. You're just saying stuff. I think a woman might want to help you overcome the hell that's in you.
But you don't believe the scripture on that?
No, but why should I have to believe that?
Because it's from God and you are none.
There's nothing wrong with us if we don't have to lose. No need to recognize an apology.
Thanks for watching The Fallen State. We need your continued support. Donate to my nonprofit here. Subscribe and like the videos here. And tell everybody and their mama about the show. Come on.